Family Chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
El Family Chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Due to the themes of this podcast, listener discretion is advised. Lock your doors, close the blinds, change your passwords. This is Secrets and Spies. Secrets and Spies is a podcast that dives into the world of espionage, terrorism, geopolitics, and intrigue. This podcast is produced and hosted by Chris Carr.
On today's podcast, I'm joined by former CIA analyst Rupal Patel, and we discuss her excellent book From CIA to CEO, which looks at unconventional life lessons for thinking bigger, leading better, and being bolder. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Take care.
The opinions expressed by guests on Secrets and Spies do not necessarily represent those of the producers and sponsors of this podcast.
Rupal, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. Well, for the listeners who might not be familiar with your work, please can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Gosh, okay. So started my career at the CIA. I spent just over 6 years there and then left and moved to London and started a couple of businesses. And now my work is a combination of writing books, giving keynotes at events and conferences, and doing leadership training.
Fantastic. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what first drew you into working for the CIA? Because it's quite a career you had there. And talk to us a little bit about what you did and how those experiences sort of shaped the way you see the world.
Yeah. So I was recruited. I did not plan for a career at the CIA. It was never one of those things that I was like, oh, you know, when I grow up, I want to be an intelligence officer. I had a very different idea as to what I was going to be doing. And that was initially, my plan was to, after graduate school, to either go to law school or go and join the Foreign Service and become a diplomat. And when I was studying, I was recruited by the agency. There was a gentleman on campus who asked me if I would like to apply for a role there. And I just sort of stumbled into saying yes, because it was not in the plan. But that's how it happened.
Fantastic. Very familiar story, that. I've had a few guests who've been approached by someone whilst at university.
Yeah. And sorry, to the latter part of your question as to what I did there. So I was hired as an analyst, which entails basically taking what we would refer to as sort of drinking from the fire hose of information, all of the clandestine intelligence, you know, the top secret stuff that's collected by our case officers, as well as just the full spectrum of information, both open source and classified, and taking it all on, you know, on a specific issue, a specific region of the world, distilling all of that and making sense of it for decision makers. So our main customer, as we would call our the people who used our analysis, was the president, and then you know, the cabinet, the military officials, foreign allies when we had partnerships with them. And so I served under the second Bush administration and the first Obama administration, and yeah, I mean, I was hired as an analyst, but I didn't want to work at a place like the CIA and spend most of my time behind a desk at headquarters. And so I regularly found or created opportunities or volunteered for opportunities to take me out into the field.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. So what made you decide to leave the agency at what you call kind of a high point and pursue an entirely different kind of career path?
There were a couple of things, some very personal and some perhaps sort of a bit bigger picture. But I would say the three things that were happening in parallel was, one, this is going to sound crazy because now with the benefit of hindsight, I realize how silly it was. But one, I felt I was getting too old to try something else. So as I was approaching my 30s and then hit 30, I was like, gosh, you know, either I decide to stay here and make a career of this, or I leave now, because if I don't leave now, I will be too old to be marketable to the outside world. So that was one sort of thing in the back of my mind. You know, milestone birthdays sort of get me anyway to reflect on big picture things. The second process was, I was just tired. I mean, I was mentally, emotionally, physically just really drained from the intensity of the work, the issues that I was working on. And I just felt I needed a break. And then sort of culminate, like the thing that really, I guess the third process that was happening at the same time was just this idea of, well, what else is out there, right? I had worked in this very unique environment for a good chunk of my life, I mean, a third of my professional career so far. And I just thought, well, you know, maybe I've proven that I can do this. I've proven I can enjoy it and I can contribute to something really important and meaningful, but let me see what else there might be out there and just push myself in a direction, test myself in something totally unknown. So those were the three things. There was no clear pull, like, oh, I definitely want to do this when I leave. And there was no big push. It was just this combination of just, I guess, internal evolution, internal sort of sense of like, yeah, maybe we try something new now.
Yeah, I can understand that. I could relate to the milestone birthdays and thinking about what's next kind of thing. It's very common. I can relate to that. So you've written this fantastic book, which is From CIA to CEO. And I spotted it at Waterloo Station and it really popped out. I think the yellow cover really helps it, actually. So why did you write this book and who did you sort of hope to reach? And what did you learn about yourself in writing this book? Because going from a CIA analyst to an author, it's quite a change.
Yeah. Who I wrote it for, if I'm being very honest, in many ways, I wrote it for myself, in the sense that I had gone through this change, this evolution, having left the CIA, moved to London, not really knowing what I was going to do with my life, or leaving it open as to sort of what happens next. And it was really born of that, like that process of trying to figure out, you know, what do I care about? What can I do with my time, my talent, my energy, et cetera? How can I find something that is as meaningful, even if in a different context, but, you know, that's give me that sense of mission and purpose and that inner exploration. And so I think fundamentally it captures how I worked through that process and is written in a way that anyone who is asking themselves that question around, you know, what next, what now, or what do I want? which are big questions that we very rarely really stop and pause to think about in any meaningful way, because so often we're just sort of pushed and nudged in certain directions, or we study certain things at university and then people think, oh, well, it'd be a good idea to do this. And so we do that. And so it was really a combination of like having gone through the process myself, seeing all of the hurdles, all of the challenges, the inner work, the external work that was required. I thought, you know what, it would be a nice way of reflecting that back to others who I know were going through it, because at the same time as I was going through that process before I wrote the book, I was sharing either through events for founders and leaders or through a newsletter that I was writing every week, sharing some of these reflections and these lessons that I was learning. And they were growing in popularity. People kept coming back to me to ask me very, very similar questions. And so I thought, you know, why not put it down in one place so that anyone can access it from anywhere, Waterloo Station, or, you know, I get pictures from like the airport in Rwanda or a small bookstore in Albania. And it's nice to know that this very human process that I went through is something that is, I think, pretty universal. And now, you know, with this book out in the world, a lot of people can at least get some ideas as to how I did it and take the tools and insights that are relevant for them. And then, of course, leave whatever isn't.
May I ask, how's the book been received? Have you had much sort of feedback at all from it?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, so I guess from there are lots of different ways to think about it. How it's been received by readers is generally been really positive. I have every day or every couple of days, you know, I'll get a totally random message either on LinkedIn or through my website or somewhere where someone will say, you know, I read this and it really helped me navigate this change, or I read this and it's really helped me reflect on, you know, sort of my career and where I'm going. And I had one of the most sort of, I don't know how to describe it, just a really powerful moment where someone who I had worked with in a different capacity, who is very, very senior, you know, in their 60s, and we had worked together very closely on a one-on-one basis. After we had stopped our work together, she read my book and she's like, it's only now after I've read your book that I realized that I don't know who I am outside of my job. And that feeling of like, oh my gosh, this person who I respect, who I admire, who's contributed so much in her field, for her to have said that meant everything. But also, you know, and she said, you know, thanks to your book, I'm now committed to finding out what I care about. And I just thought, that is why I wrote it, you know? And so the reception has been beautiful, because I think there's something that also self-selects, right? People who, like yourself, or people who read my book are looking for just some ideas, right? No definitive answers. I don't tell you to do this or to do that, but it's this, again, this very shared human experience of like, have I been following somebody else's path, right? Have I been true to myself? How do I even know what being true to myself even means? You know, these sort of fundamental, almost philosophical questions. And so the reception, it hasn't been universally positive, right? You always get your one-star reviews. And I do this sort of as a, almost like as a weird sadistic exercise, where I'll go and I'll read my negative reviews, because everybody's entitled to their opinion. But what I find so interesting is how people, and I know other authors experience this as well, how people will read things in your book that aren't even there. And so I look at some of these one-star reviews and I was like, but I never said that. Or I actually said the total opposite of that. How did you put that in there when it's very clearly there is no way that you could have misconstrued that? And so, you know, you got to take the good with the bad. And I always tell people, like, of course, the goal isn't for everyone to love you. The goal is for you to reach the people who you need to reach or want to reach and who need to hear from you in that moment. So the reception has been what I expected it would be, right? Some not so great, some in between, but the people who it's resonating with, that's who I wrote it for.
Yeah, very powerful hearing about your colleague there, because I think it is very common for us. It's very, I think, a very Western thing to define yourself a little bit by your career. And certainly society pushes us in that direction to define ourselves by what we do. So yeah, what a revelation. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So on that then, so we're going to go into some themes of your book here. So you encourage readers to go deep into their identity. So how does your understanding identity help people lead better lives?
So first of all, it's not about, you know, sort of identity politics. It's not about, you know, sort of what you superficially look like. For me, identity is that inner part of like, what are your values? What do you care about? What is important to you? What is meaningful to you? What are some of, yes, some of your personality traits and some of your strengths that are not unique to the human race, but unique perhaps just to you and your abilities to do them in the way that you do? And the reason I focus so much on that self-awareness and that self-analysis piece is, again, it goes back to we are never given those tools to do that reflection and that understanding of like, who am I and what do I care about? And at some point in life, often in middle age, it comes to a point where the question becomes so painful to not answer that you have to force yourself to do that difficult work around looking in the mirror and what does it all mean and where am I going? And, you know, some of those, again, bigger picture questions. And so I focus on that first because I think that has to be the foundation on which everything is built, right? If you don't understand how you operate, if you're just going on autopilot or operating based on unconscious behaviors or beliefs, well, then again, how are you ever going to know if that is what is right for you? And so I start at least with, you know, these very open-ended questions around unpacking certain assumptions we hold about ourselves, unpacking, you know, what it is that, again, the things that bring meaning and joy to us in our lives, and whenever possible, helping the reader work through, well, I'm not trying to make this 180 overhaul of my life, right? But how can I start making slow and consistent tweaks and changes so that there's just less friction, there's less anxiety, there's less tension between what I want or feel or need as an individual and then how I'm showing up in the world. And sometimes there isn't that tension, but at the very least, I think we all owe it to ourselves to do the work to figure out, like, am I living in alignment with what's important to me? Or am I, again, you know, sort of shaping my life based on what is expected of me by others? And even if that isn't relevant to my values.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Now, in your book, you have this thing called the HLLH quadrant, which is a great tool for reviewing where we spend our time and energy. And I must admit, I will definitely be doing this at some point soon in the new year. Can you talk to us through how listeners might use this as a sort of tool to help them sort of analyze how they're spending their time and how to reset for the new year?
Sure. So I think, again, as with so much in life, we end up doing things sometimes without question, sometimes without realizing all of the things that we're taking on and are doing by default and trying to squeeze in. And I think fundamentally what this exercise does, and I'll talk through it in a little bit of detail, is helps us realize why we are so overwhelmed, right? Like, I don't know a single human being out there who feels like, yeah, I've got it all covered, right? I think everybody feels this bombardment of responsibilities and pressures, and everybody wants a piece of you to do this or to do that, and being pulled in so many different directions. And so the idea behind the HLLH quadrant is for us to, again, to bring a bit of analysis and very intentional decision-making to how we are filling our days. And I think, so the exercise effectively help, you know, sort of has us passively look at, you know, what are all of the things that have filled my day for the past week or the past 2 weeks or month or whatever it is, and then categorizing them into these four boxes, one of which is things that are high value tasks that you love, things that are high value tasks that you hate. For me, it's things like doing taxes, but, you know, yes, I don't enjoy it, but it's important to do. And then there's the low value things that you love doing, right? Things like binging on Netflix, for example, and then the low value stuff that you hate. And so by bringing some awareness to what we are doing and then categorizing them, again, the next step then becomes, okay, well, of those things that are both low value and I don't enjoy doing, why am I doing them, right? To get us to ask ourselves those questions of like, do I really need to be doing this thing anymore? Or can I just stop doing it entirely? Can I maybe delegate some of it to somebody else? Or can I just do less of it so that I don't feel this constant pressure of like, there's too much to do and not enough time? And, you know, there's multiple layers of analysis and sort of action taking after that, very much like the intelligence work. Gather all of the information, categorize it, make sense of it, and then you can act with a clear, objective picture of what's going on instead of relying on our inconsistent brains to tell us, okay, well, you know, this is how we're spending our time or this is how we're spending it.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. So you tell readers to bedazzle their life CV their way. So what does that mean in practical terms for someone entering the new year?
It goes back to this idea of self-awareness and what's important to you. Once you have decided what those things are, then it is up to you as an individual human who has agency and responsibility for your own life, and an ability to change things where, you know, in many, many ways, to then do the work to work closer towards what bedazzling looks like. And I use that analogy from this, I think it's a 1980s era toy where you could just put gems on all kinds of things. It was called a bedazzler. And people were putting these silly little plastic gems on, you know, clothes and t-shirts and sneakers. And the idea there to bejewel your CV is you are choosing what it is that you want to beautify in your life, right? Whether it's your career or your relationships or your relationship with yourself and your body, whatever it looks like, you get to decide what bedazzling looks like for you, not what many of us do, which is, you know, looking for external validation and somebody to tell you, oh, well, this is what you should do next, or this is how you should, you know, sort of navigate your career, but instead reflecting back on all of that earlier work around the self-analysis, which is, here's what I care about. Here are my values. Here's how I want them to show up in my life in ways that perhaps they haven't been showing up, and here are the things that I'm going to do differently. So that's why that piece of really digging into yourself is so important, because then that will help you shape, okay, well, you know what? I've lived my life up until this point in this way. And I'm not going to change everything, because we're not looking for, again, these like crazy dramatic overhauls. But as I'm entering a new year, right, what are the few, and I would say make it no more than three, what are the few key things that I want to try doing differently? Is it, again, how I show up at work, how I show up in my relationships, maybe what I'm doing with my free time, who I'm spending it with? There's an infinite array of things that we could change, but it's, again, we really owe it to ourselves to think about, where's our time going? What are the inputs? What direction are we traveling in if we don't change anything? And then what do we want to change so that things can go in a direction that we want them to go in?
Bit of a random bonus question. Are there any recommendations you have for negative self-talk? Because sometimes when we look back on our lives, and maybe things have not gone in the direction we've necessarily wanted it to, or we've, I don't know, had critics, external critics judging our life. How do we kind of overcome those things as well? Because I think that kind of relates into all of this.
Yes. And I love this question, because there are two things that I think are really, really simple and easy to do. One, and I talk a little bit about it in the book, but it's something that I think bears a lot more time and attention than it got in the book, which is to question those assumptions. And so what happens when we have that negative self-talk of, oh, well, you know, I'm just not good with numbers, or I could never, you know, get in front of a crowd of people and speak, or, oh gosh, you know, a podcast would be too scary to start, whatever that is, right? That voice in our heads. What we often do is we will look for all of the data points that support that negative view, right? It's like, oh, well, these are all the times that I really screwed this up, or this is all the evidence I can find that proves that I suck at this thing. And what we need to start doing is not just looking for the confirming information, but to look for the disconfirming information. Because every single one of us has been confident in certain contexts, has been good with numbers in certain contexts, has been able to do something in public that may have previously terrified them. Doesn't mean that you do it all the time, but you have data from your lived life and experience that probably, I would almost say inevitably, is not what you always assume. Right? That shows that you can do the thing, even if it's just in small circumstances, even if you're just sticking up for somebody else or doing it for your kids or whatever other universe in which it happens, you've probably done the thing that you've told yourself that you can't do. So instead of just believing it wholesale and taking it for as a given, instead of just looking for the confirming information, look for the disconfirming evidence. And you will see that actually you can then build on that. And that comes to the second part, which is once you realize that nothing is black or white, right? Nobody's totally confident or totally unconfident, totally good at something or totally terrible. There's so much of a gradation. And so now that you see that you have done this thing, despite what you assume about yourself, now you need to start building on that slowly, keeping it small and growing from there. And that can happen, for example, if it's, I will stick with the, you know, some people are like, oh, well, I'm terrible at languages. Well, fine, but maybe you've found a way to be good at it in a discrete context. And now maybe you just do 10 minutes of like a Duolingo every week and build on that, right? And do it gradually, as opposed to putting all of this pressure on yourself to say, okay, well, I have to master it or it's not worth doing. I think there's so much, especially at the beginning of year, there's so much pressure for us to have these big, and I hate this phrase, it's so obnoxious, these big, hairy, audacious goals, right? And it's not to say that you shouldn't, but from where we are now to where we set those goals has to be achievable, because otherwise it's just going to be depressing when you get to the end of the year and you're like, oh, I didn't lose 300 pounds and I didn't transform my relationship with my husband and my kids overnight. And I, you know, whatever the big thing that you tell yourself, it has to be gradual. So build on what you've already got. And then sort of the asterisk to that is, and make sure you don't try to do it alone. Whatever it is that you're working on, whether it's a skill or a personality thing or a whatever development mental thing that you want to improve upon or change, you know, in the year to come, is something that you probably need some qualified support, someone who's done it successfully, and is aligned with your values. Because otherwise, it's going to be too hard to give up. There'll be times where it gets really, really tough and you'll just want to throw your hands up in the air and be like, well, I gave it a shot, but I'm not doing this anymore. You need another person or people with you to help you navigate those ups and downs. So I would say that's, you know, a lot of the things that we need to consider is not to do too much and make it doable for ourselves, because then it creates that positive momentum, right? Because usually what happens at the beginning of every year, people set this laundry list of huge transformations, and then they get to December, none of it's happened. And then they start January again, and it's this laundry list again, and then it never happens. And the cycle continues, and it creates this negative spiral of like, oh, here's another year that I sucked and I didn't, you know, accomplish the things that I wanted, as opposed to narrowing it to three key things, like thinking now, if in a year from now, December 31st, you reflect back on your year, what are the only three things, if you did nothing else other than these three things, what would they have to be for you to feel like they, it was a really good year, that you're proud of yourself, that you, you know, you feel it was a success, and then focus on those three. It doesn't have to be massive for it to be important.
Let's take a break and be right back with more.
El Family Chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1. Download Rocket Money. Step 2. Link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3. Create a financial goal, $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
El Family Chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1. Download Rocket Money. Step 2. Link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You talked to us about creating your own field operations manual. So what does that look like in practice?
Yeah. So there are quite a few sort of sub pieces to it. But again, it goes back to understanding really how do you operate, right? Like, what are the conditions that you specifically need to show up and perform at your best in any context? And what are the contexts in which you know it is going to be like wading through molasses for you to be at your best? And then once you understand that, again, it's making the tweaks around your life, your career, your work setup, whatever, to help it be more in alignment with where you can show up at your best and to try to minimize the context in which it's going to be at your worst. So a very small but specific example for my life, I get hangry. So if I haven't eaten every 2 to 3 hours, you do not want to be near me because I turn into a very, very unkind, short-tempered person. And so this is something that I know about myself. And so I create literally all around my office, all around my home, there's fruit, there's little snacks so that even if I'm dashing around doing a million things, I can always find a way to feed myself and sort of make sure that I am not going into a meeting feeling agitated or irritated or annoyed, right? It's a small thing, but we underestimate how important our physical needs are. And I think we've gotten far too skewed into like trying to like beat our bodies into submission kind of thing. If you need to eat, you need to eat, right? Same thing with like rest and hydration, whatever it is. It's a small thing. It has an outsized impact. And then the next thing is once you know how you operate, then you have to also do some work to communicate that to the people who are affected by that, right? Whether it's your team, your colleagues, your partner, your kids, whoever it is. My children know that when mommy needs a snack, right? and they, because they know that I need that for myself. They also know because I have told them that mornings and late at night are not my best time, right? It's when I'm the lowest on energy. It's when my mind is racing. And so that is not the time to come to me with a million requests or like, you know, ask me for this, that, and the other thing. They know that because I know that about myself and I've shared that with them. I've taken away the guessing game of like, how am I going to work with this person? And do I need to be tiptoeing around them? The same is true with my husband. The same is true with my team. You know, if there are certain times of the day or the week where I just need to be off and not disturbed, I tell them. If there's an emergency, of course, they can make an exception. But otherwise, I think we've overcomplicated so much of human interaction by being like, oh, well, if they knew me well enough, they'd figure it out. Or if they really loved me, they'd know what I need right now. That's not how human beings work, right? We're complex. Our needs evolve and they change sometimes from day to day. So communicate, understand what it is you need to show up and perform at your best, and then communicate it to the people who are affected by it.
How do you recommend communicating that? In what context? Because do you just literally have a team announcement and explain that I'm like that Snickers commercial and get hangry at certain times of the day? How do you sort of relay that info?
Yeah, I think, look, everybody has a different style and approach. Mine is to be as transparent as possible in a relevant way to the audience, right? So like, when I talk to my team, for example, I can be a bit more sort of professional than I am with my kids, but not so sort of buttoned up. We have a very open conversational sort of culture, right, between us. And I set the stage from the very beginning. Every time somebody joins, I'm like, look, this is how I work, right? I don't like phone calls. I don't like being interrupted if I'm doing something that requires a lot of like focus energy. And here's how you will know when I'm doing one of those things. Here are the exceptions that you can, you know, like if I say, you know, do not disturb or whatever it is, here are the exceptions and the conditions in which you should disturb me. And I just make it a very clear, and I ask a very clear sort of communication from the very beginning. And I ask them to do the same, right? If there are certain times of the day that you just need to be off or certain, you know, sort of times of the year or whatever it is, please let me know. It doesn't mean that either side will always be able to accommodate. That's not what the goal is here. It's not that everybody's constantly like trying to be like, oh, well, this is when she's hungry and this is when she's, you know, wants to be doing deep work and therefore I can't do anything. It's, I know what the general parameters are, but I also know that when there are these conditions that we need to sort of, you know, pop through that bubble, we can do it. And that's all been put out there. So it's just respecting that people have different ways of doing things. And you conform when possible, and you don't when it's not possible. It's not black or white or all or nothing. With my children, of course, I do it a little bit differently, right? And then the tone I take and the way I explain it to them is very, very different. But I think everybody can have a similar conversation instead of constantly doing that thing of like getting resentful when somebody interrupts you or being annoyed when you've got a phone call and you're in the middle of something. And you know, I've played around with different things. We used to have this traffic light system where it was like, you know, green is you can come in and interrupt and no problem. And my door is literally open. Yellow is, look, you know, the door is closed, but feel free to knock and interrupt me. And red is, unless somebody is dying or the building is on fire, please do not, you know, please like do not it. Interrupt this.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes that's really helpful, right? Just have a visual cue of like, okay, I can come back. The other thing that does, especially with team, and I would say even with children, is that it forces people to really understand, do they need you or can they solve this on your own, right? Like, is it really something desperate that like mommy needs to get the plaster for you, or could you just use your stool and get the plaster yourself, right? Similar with, you know, in a work context, sometimes we can be too available and constantly be solving problems for other people, when sometimes making ourselves less available forces them to do the work of figuring out what they need to do. And then again, within certain parameters, getting it done themselves.
Could you please explain the concept of tactical ignorance and when we should deliberately ignore things for the sake of focus and mental health? And I think this is actually very important, especially in today's world of constant information.
I love this tool because it's so simple and so powerful, and it sort of gets us to think about both sides of that piece, right? The tactical piece and the ignorance piece, because ignorance is not a good thing. This is not something that we should, you know, sort of be cultivating in ourselves. It's the tactical part that makes it really, really powerful. And what I mean by tactical ignorance is literally using ignorance as a tactic for, like you said, your mental health, your performance, or whatever. So there are different manifestations. One, it's what inputs are you letting in and what inputs are you keeping out, right? What are you very, very intentionally ignoring and being ignorant of? The news is one of those things. And here is my decision matrix for how much or how little we should pay attention to the news. Can you do something about it? And will you do something about it? If those two conditions aren't met, then why are you bothering to let it in, right? This is where that decision and that intentionality comes into play, where the tactical part comes into play. It's not to say that you bury your head in the sand and you just hope for bad things to pass you by because you're ignoring them. It's to say, well, if I'm not going to do something about it and I can't do something about it, then why am I adding that pressure to myself? Instead of, you know, shifting all of that energy and creating this anxiety and the stress that comes from bombarding ourselves with all of this stuff that we either won't or can't or both, you know, do something about, shifting that focus and attention instead on the things you can do something about, that you actually care about and care about enough to commit your time, your energy, your resources, your wealth, whatever it is, to focusing on. Because too many people feel like, well, because I know about something, I have to do something about it. That's not true. We can't all solve every single problem, right? But I can choose, you know what? Climate's really important to me. You can choose, you know, gender equality is really important to me. We can all choose one or two things that we really, really care about and focus on caring about that, and then tactically ignoring everything else. Because otherwise, what happens is exactly what you said. There's anxiety, there's mental health repercussions, there's this feeling of helplessness and powerlessness, which I think is it's a pandemic now in the world, right? Because of the news, it's so depressing and everyone feels like, things are too big for us and too many things are changing and the world is going in the direction and I don't agree with that and this is depressing and that's depressing. That is always going to be the case. So instead of wallowing in all of the negativity and all that stuff, what are you going to do something about, right? Choose the cause or the issue and then do something about that. Ignore everything else. There's also a performance piece here. And this is the example that I talk about in the book, which is in many contexts, right? We often work ourselves up around like, the hierarchy and the atmospherics, and we do like, oh, I'm about to go into a meeting with this person, or I'm about to do a presentation for this person. And we spin ourselves up into this like tizzy of like, again, anxiety and feeling, oh, they're so important and I'm so, you know, junior or whatever it is. In those contexts, I think it's really, really important to, again, tactically ignore who and what is going to happen, not to the extent that you're going in like an ignoramus, right? Know enough, know who they are, what they care about, why you're there, but then don't deep dive into all of the details about who, you know, all of their accolades and their position, et cetera, because it's not going to help you deliver the thing that you're there to deliver. And so the example I give in the book is, you know, when I was in a war zone, I was briefing a four-star general when I was 26 years old. I was a civilian, female, woman in this very male, masculine, you know, military hierarchical context. And I didn't have the time or the bandwidth to get distracted by memorizing everybody's ranks. I told myself very intentionally that I was going to tactically ignore that. I wasn't going to look at this. I mean, obviously, I know what 4 stars means, but everything else, I was going to not focus any attention on it because it didn't matter. It wasn't going to help me do my job any better. And if anything, it would distract from doing it better. So I tactically ignored that and then channeled all of that focus and energy on preparing as best as I possibly could for that briefing that I was giving.
So leadership for some is all about the job title, but you argue that leadership has nothing to do with your title, only your skills and execution. So can you talk to us about that and how we can become better leaders?
Yeah, for me, you know, again, you probably got the sense in the book, it's really about self-leadership. And I think too often we either wait for someone to tell us what to do, someone who has that title, who has the pay scale or whatever, to tell us how to do certain things or what to do. And for me, fundamentally, I think anybody can lead from wherever they are. And what that looks like is identifying problem, an opportunity, a challenge, something, and then doing what you can about it. Taking some action, doing, you know, being proactive as opposed to being passively waiting to constantly be led by others. Mm. And again, that's true in a workplace context. That can be true in our own lives, in our relationships, in our friendships, whatever, you know, context you want to think about it in. But we can all be proactive about identifying something that needs to change or be fixed and then do something to change or fix it.
How do you personally reset behavior patterns when stress levels rise? Because that's particularly a big point there.
Yeah. This, to be honest, I think all of the things that I talk about in the book are lifelong practices. I know from my own experience that this is, and even though I write about these things, it's not like I've nailed it and now I'm like some perfect like Zen monk, right? Like I get stressed out. I shout at my husband. I lose my, you know, patience with clients and suppliers. Like all of the things happen. So for me, the practice of resetting certain behaviors that are not serving you or that you want to change is to acknowledge, one, that it is a practice. It's not, it might be a lifelong practice and you just get incrementally better at it over, you know, months and years and a lifetime. The second thing is, again, this goes back to that self-awareness piece, is we all need different fundamentals in place in order to manage those stresses, because stress happens to everybody. But if you're already overflowing and hyper-charged and sort of spun up about things from every, you know, lots of different things, it's going to be a lot harder to be calm when you are stressed, when there is a big stressor. And so it comes back to taking care of those core fundamentals that you need for yourself. For me, like I said earlier, it's food, making sure that I'm regularly fed. It is some form of movement and fresh air. Like it doesn't have to be a 6-hour, you know, sweat session in the gym, but I need some physical movement just to physically get some of the energy out. And I need that much more regularly than I realized. It's also a lot more sleep than, you know, I need to be optimal, like a 9-hour sleep cycle. And that is true for me. I know others who can perform differently, but for me, it's those fundamentals. And then lastly, it is having help around you, having qualified people who can support you and knowing that not everything has to fall on your shoulders, because we all probably take on too much. And there's this myth of like, well, you know, it doesn't count if it's not hard and you haven't sweat and bled and suffered for your art or for your career. That's total, excuse my language, that's total bullshit. Like nothing, life is hard enough as it is. Why are we making it harder than it has to be? If my hack for everything is to ask for help when you need it. That is true in my work. That is true in my home. And it doesn't mean you'll always get it, but at least it means that you've given others a chance. And it's also, you're giving yourself a chance.
Yeah.
So take care of the fundamentals, the very physical basic needs that you have as an individual. And that will be different person to person. And then ask for help when you need it. And then when you have those things, it becomes easier. It's not easy, but it is easier to manage the stresses when they come and you know, feel like they're going to be overwhelming.
You talk about being unshakable. So how can listeners build resilience and avoid being derailed by criticism or failure?
I mean, to be honest, the really simple answer to that is that you have to acknowledge that it's just part of the process. It is just what it means to be human. It is not that you are uniquely cursed or that you're uniquely shitty at what you do. Yes, fine, all of us can improve in different ways, but There. I have it actually written on my whiteboard next to me, and you can't see it, but there's a, and I think it's an Aristotle quote where it says, if you want to avoid, the only way to avoid criticism is to be nothing, do nothing, and say nothing, right? And that's true. Like, just your virtue of your existence, some people aren't going to like you. That's okay. Some people are going to think what you put out into the world isn't great. That's okay. There is no need to please everyone. There is no need to be accepted by everyone. That shouldn't even be the goal. And so criticism is just part of life, right? Like, I don't know a single person who hasn't been criticized at some point in their life. And yes, some hurts more than others, and there's some that is a little bit sharper and sort of more ill-intentioned. But the reality is it's just part of the human experience. And I sort of jokingly say, people, you need to get over yourself because it's not about you. It really isn't. And I often say, you know, sort of criticism and sort of negativity and that sort of like haterism is like when you get a speeding ticket, right? Everybody else on the highway was speeding, and yet you were the one that the cops stopped and gave a ticket to, or that the cameras caught, right? It's just happened sometimes. And the same, that's how I think of like really just mean and hurtful criticism is, I just happened to come along and be like in the wrong place at the wrong time when this person was having a really bad day and they decided to take it out on me. And that's cool, right? Like, again, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I'm not going to take it personally because it is just what it means to be alive. And that, if you want to avoid that, then, you know, again, back to that quote, it's like, then say nothing, do nothing, and be nothing.
Yeah, and that'd be a fun life if you follow that.
Exactly.
You encourage readers to use everything you've got, their network, skills, personality, to get what they deserve. So why do you think so many people hold back?
Oh, this one, I think there's a lot of pieces as to why people hold back. One is fear, right? Fear of failure, fear of looking stupid, fear of criticism, fear of all of that kind of stuff. Then there's also just a bit of like, well, I don't know what I'm doing, so I can't guarantee success, so I might as well not try, right? There's this idea that like, unless I get the result I want, it's not worth doing at all. So that holds some people back. And then of course, there's like whatever baggage we will have picked up over the course of our lives, you know, whether from other people or other experiences that are really painful that, you know, sort of make us a little bit nervous about doing things a certain way. But I think for all of those things, this resistance and holding back, my question, and it's not, and I appreciate that people will have had some horrific things happen to them that give them really strong reasons for holding back, or maybe, you know, even the moderate things that feel really, really big. And all I want to ask is, but is that, are you going to let that thing determine what the rest of your life looks like? Because for me, one of the things that really keeps things in perspective is, I do believe that this is all we've got, right? This is the one life you get. You've got about 80 years with which to do what you want to do and leave a mark, if you even want to leave a mark. So with that in mind, if this is the only chance that I've got, I want to do the most that I can, you know, and all of those critics and haters and jerks be damned. But just because I've decided to do that, it doesn't mean, again, that I do it alone. And I think that piece of those who are a little bit nervous about trying something different, there's more to it than just, okay, fine, I'm going to be bold now, or I'm going to do this thing. It's fine, make the decision, but then you need to create the right community around you. And I talk a lot about community and people and, you know, your ops team. You need to work on your mindset, again, which is why I do a lot of the mindset work in the book. You need to work on your knowledge, right? Whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish or do differently, you need to figure out how to do it. And then the fourth piece is that accountability piece around the action taking, right? So once you decide that, you know what, I want to do this thing and I'm going to try to work out of this comfort zone, you need those four things. You need the community, the mindset, the knowledge, and the action. And then I fundamentally believe that anyone can do anything with those four pillars in place. I, again, fundamentally believe that every single human being has probably got far more potential than any of us will ever realize. But because of all of that other stuff, we hold ourselves back and it feels safer to not try. But for those of you who want to just dip your toe in the water, right? Again, start small. It doesn't mean that you go from like having a desire to write a book and having written nothing to like being like, okay, I need to publish a book by the end of this year. start writing little reflection pieces to yourself. I mean, that's how I got started, actually. I started with a blog that I hadn't published, right? Like, I didn't tell anybody about it because I was like, oh, who's going to want to hear from me? And why would they want to read what I have to say? And then it evolved into something bigger, and then it evolved. Like, the change can be gradual. And I would argue that any change you make should be gradual because that's how you can sustain it. So once you decide that actually all of that negativity and the things that are holding me back, I'm sick of them holding me back, then you got to do the work to get those other four things in place.
Yeah. In your book, you talk about collecting all source intel, taking information from everywhere before making a decision. Can you just walk us through how listeners can do this in their own lives, perhaps as a weekly habit or for a, you know, for sort of personal goals?
Yeah. So it's not like this, again, this like blanket taking all of the data points, right? The all source information, especially when it comes to your personal goals or anything that, you know, you care about achieving, it has to be relevant, right? The information source has to be relevant to that goal. There's no sense in, you know, studying like, I don't know, engineering if you want to figure out how to, I don't know, be a better graphic designer, right? Like, you have to make sure the data that you're letting in is relevant. Also, the inputs are from people or sources that are qualified to give it, right? So people who have actually achieved the thing that you want to achieve and done it successfully, done it well, done it in a way that, you know, sort of aligns even generally with what you want to do. And then also, again, that values piece, like any inputs that we let in, like, does that align with my values? Because there's so many ways to achieve any goal, right? There's so many ways to be successful at anything. And so making sure that those inputs, that all source intel that you're taking in is relevant, credible, and aligned in values is the best way to make sure that you're getting in the right input.
Let's take a break and be right back with more.
El Family Chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111 and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
El Family Chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You encourage readers to create what doesn't exist, to be proactive rather than wait for permission. Could you share with us an example from your own career and how someone might apply that mindset in the new year ahead?
Ooh, again, it goes back to that question of like, what problem needs to be solved, right? Whether it's in your family unit or in your team or in your organization, you will know the intricacies of that better than I ever can even guess. And so what needs to change and how can you proactively take steps to change it? So I will give an example from my time at the CIA. You know, I was in my early 20s when I joined, and I was thrown into a sort of a world in which the intelligence community was still trying to figure out how it was going to better coordinate with each other and work more closely together after 9/11. And we were still finding our feet, right? Like there was all kinds of different initiatives going on. And from where I stood, I looked around and I said, well, actually, there's this entity over here that actually I think we should develop a stronger relationship with. So I created a rotational, you know, program. I pitched it to my supervisors and I said, here's why I think this would be a good idea. Here's what I think it would, you know, how it would help the work that we're doing and how it would benefit our mission, et cetera. I sold my case and then they agreed and I did that program. And then it turned into a recurring rotational opportunity for other people even after I left that team. It was a small example, but it was like, I know from my sort of at the coalface, experience, like this is a challenge. This is a problem. This is something that can be fixed. Here's what I've got to as far as a solution. I'm not waiting for someone to tell me to do it, right? I didn't wait for my supervisors to be like, hey, why don't you find a way to do this better? I saw something that needed to be fixed. I saw an opportunity to fix it. And so I found a way to do it. I think we can all do that in big and small ways. I've also done that even, again, this is a lifelong practice and process. I did that just a couple of weeks ago with my partner. I have two small kids and our lives are crazy. My husband and I both work for ourselves. My work takes me all over the world all the time. Our kids are still young and need a lot of, you know, hands-on attention. And every week just feels like this crazy marathon, or not even like a marathon that we're sprinting, right? And so just a couple of weeks ago, I realized I was like, I hate going into the week and feeling like it's a free-for-all. And so now we've started every Sunday just having a 10-minute conversation where he and I sit down and look at the week ahead and say, okay, this is who's going to do the pickup. I'm going to do the drop-offs here. Here's how we're going to do these activities. This is when I'm traveling. This is what's going on here. Even though it's already in the calendar and we could all have seen it, just having that 10-minute conversation resets the expectations, gives us a sense of, okay, like this is how we're going to do this thing for the next week. And it has made such a huge difference. One, in just my own personal anxiety levels, but also in the harmony of our marriage, because otherwise what would happen is like we would just do everything ad hoc and then I'd get annoyed when he hadn't seen something in the calendar or he'd have a meeting and get frustrated with me that I wasn't around to help with, you know, other things. So these little problems that we just sort of grind our teeth and suck up, if there's something we can do to fix it, why wouldn't we want to do that? Like I said, life's hard enough. There's enough friction and annoyance and other things as it is. Why not do the things that we can do to help make it a little bit easier?
Yeah, very wise. And I must admit, a practice I do now where every Sunday, I just like to create a little note in Apple Notes with little things you can tick off just of what the key things of the week are, the key events and stuff. Because there are some days where you wake up feeling a bit lost and suddenly like, oh yes, I need to do this, this and this. And it just really helps build that map and takes out a lot of anxiety. So yeah, very good technique.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that. So looking ahead now, so as we look towards the new year ahead, what's one challenge or action step you would set for listeners to help them create a life that feels sort of true to who they are? Quite a big question.
Yeah, that's a loaded one. I will tell you what I do because it's really helped me in so many different ways. And I would say choose one thing that is scary but interesting to you and find a way to start doing that thing. So I will give you some examples from my own, and the reason I say this to do it in this way is because choosing something that's scary but interesting and maybe slightly meaningful, if we do it every year, one thing every year, it creates so much more confidence as well that we can do things that we'd never thought possible. So here are a few examples from my life. One, last year, I started taking Spanish classes again. I speak Spanish to a decent level, but have always been interested in becoming properly fluent, but it felt like, oh, I don't have enough time and it's, you know, it's going to be this and it's going to be that and it's a bit awkward and, you know, I blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, but no, why not, right? It's interesting to me. It's meaningful to me. And it's something that's a little bit scary. I'm going to do it. And I've been doing it now for 2 years, right? There's no end in sight where I'm just going to decide I'm perfect and stop. But it's been such a nice practice. It's given me the confidence again that I am good with languages and I sort of let that slide for so many years. But two, it's also just something for its own sake. There's no external reason to do it other than I want to do it. And I think that's the other thing. Sometimes just doing things for their own sake, for their sheer enjoyment of it, is something we forget about. The other thing that I've done is a couple of years ago, I set myself the challenge to be able to do 10 chin-ups. And for the longest time, because I'm a girl and because I have long arms, personal trainers told me, oh, it's going to be too hard for you, you know, all of these stupid things. And I was like, well, that's idiotic. Like, just because I'm a woman, you don't think I could do a chin-up? And so I set that as an intention. And the first year went by, still didn't do it. Second year went by, still hadn't done it. It took me 2.5 years to get to be able to do 10 chin-ups. So the idea is not just to set a goal, but it's to set a goal with an open-ended deadline. I think we've put so much unnecessary pressure on these 12-month cycles. And if it doesn't happen in 12 months, then it doesn't count. Well, why, right? Like, it's so arbitrary. Why not 10 months? Why not 16 months? Like, why is 12 the one that it's easy to mark off? I understand, but it is totally arbitrary. So set a goal that's meaningful, interesting, and slightly scary, and then just commit to doing it until you've gotten it done. It will help with confidence. It will help sort of just make things a little bit more interesting and exciting for you. And I think it just helps us remind ourselves that we, again, can do far more than we assume that we are capable of doing. And so my scary thing for next year is to take singing lessons, because I have always wanted to be able to sing. I don't think I can, but it is something that I'm committed to just trying because it's scary and it would be fun for me to make some progress on. So I think thinking about things in that way too is not everything has to have like a big meaning in like my career or in my life or like some external accomplishment. It can be something just for you. But I think the scariness is really key, because then it just builds that confidence, which I think so many people it would benefit from having more of.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. So one last sort of big loaded question, slightly personal. So what does success mean to you now after CIA life and entrepreneurship?
Yes. For me, fundamentally, success is liking who I am. And there's sort of an extension to that. I'm stealing from, I think it was Maya Angelou. It's liking who I am, liking what I do, and liking how I do it. But I think the first part is the hardest part, the liking who you are. Because one, it feels a little bit weird, right? To be like, oh, I like myself. Like, it seems so like new agey and sort of kind of woo-woo and stupid. But there are so many, and I will put myself up, you know, as part of this group of people, so many people who really struggle to just accept who they are. And yes, acknowledge that there's room for improvement and nothing is perfect, but just to be like, you know what, I'm good with who I am. I don't need to prove anything to anyone. I don't need to achieve something to feel like I can finally feel okay with who I am. Like, that's a really learned behavior, right? We are all born into families that love us just for our existence. Well, hopefully, you know, so many people have that blessing from the beginning. Like, you're just accepted for your existence, right? Nobody's looking at a baby and being like, oh, well, you know, if you don't learn how to crawl by 2 months, then we're just going to give up on you, right? Like, it's crazy. And you're laughing because it is so stupid. But over time, we do that. And over time, that is done to us, right? We're made to feel like, well, we have to do certain things in order to deserve love or to deserve acceptance or to deserve our place in the world. And that's really damaging. And I think it affects so much of the way we live our lives, because then we're constantly trying to prove ourselves and earn, you know, the respect or the admiration or the whatever it is that we feel we need to work for. And so this feeling of like enoughness, for me, that is success, because I have worked my butt off to finally get to a point where, and doing a lot of the work that I share in the book of like that self-reflection and questioning the assumptions and doing all of that stuff to get to a point where like, you know what, if nothing changes in my life right now, I'm still good. Like, I'm happy with who I am. And that, I think, is something that is so underestimated as far as a goal is concerned, is like just liking who you are.
Yeah, very wise words. Thank you very much for sharing that. One last question. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this. What's one spy skill every listener should adopt in their daily life starting today?
Ooh. For me, it's something that I call in the book enlightened swagger. Mm. And this idea is the swagger is feeling like, yeah, I got this. Like, look at me. I can accomplish anything. What anything is possible, right? Because again, like I said a few minutes ago, I fundamentally believe that anything is possible. Any individual can achieve pretty much anything. But the enlightened part comes from it not being an in-your-face endeavor, right? Like at the CIA, you're not shouting in people's faces about, oh, look at this successful mission or that successful mission, because you can't, right? It's all classified. And so almost that inner confidence and an inner assurance that comes from being like, you know what? I did this thing. I don't need to brag about this thing, but I know I've done it. Like that practice of like I said, enlightened swagger is so key, because then it's less about other people. It's less about that external validation or that recognition or that piece of like feeling like somebody else will tell you when you're enough and when you deserve to be a part of whatever you want to be a part of. It's like, I've got this. I know I can do it. I'm going to do the work to try to figure out how to do it and make it happen, but I don't need to be in anyone's face about it.
Mm. Fantastic. Do you find being former CIA gives you a slight confidence that you might not have had just because you've dealt with things that kind of matters of life and death?
I don't know, right? And I think about that often because, you know, is it that I was confident and that's why I joined an organization like the CIA where some of these skills would be needed? Or did, you know, did I have the raw materials and then they refined it? And I genuinely don't know. My hunch is that, like everyone, I'm confident in some things and less confident in others. And the CIA developed a very specific area of my confidence. And then from that foundation, I could build the other parts of confidence.
Rupal, thank you so much for joining me today. So where can listeners find out more about you, your work, and your book?
So my book website is CIAtoCEO.com. My work website is RupalYPatel.com. Or you can find me on Instagram at RupalYPatel. And I'm just about to launch a Substack called Thinker, Traveler, School Mom, Spy.
Brilliant. Well, I look forward to that. Please send me the link to that because I'll make sure it's in the show notes. But thank you so much for joining me today. It's been awesome.
It's been my pleasure, Chris. Thank you for having me.
For listening. This is Secrets and Spies.
Family chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt,
or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
El family chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
El family chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
El family chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
El family chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
El Family Chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.